I'm Jethro Jones from Transformative Principle, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, today I got Dr. Barbara Blackburn back, and she's talking about her latest book, Rigor in the RTI and MTSS Classroom, Practical Tools and Strategies, co-authored with Bradley S. Witzel. You're going to love this one. Lots of practical advice, just like it says in the subtitle. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Dr. Barbara Blackburn has dedicated her life to raising the level of rigor and motivation for professional educators and students alike. Her books are focused on providing concrete examples that are easy to understand and use in the classroom. A few of her book titles are Rigor Made Easy, Getting Started, Rigorous Schools and Classrooms Leading the Way, Rigor in Your Classroom, A Toolkit for Teachers, Literacy from A to Z, Rigor for Students with Special Needs, Motivating Struggling Learners, 10 Ways to Build Student Success, Rigor is Not a Four-Letter Word, and Rigor in Assessment in the Classroom, as well as many others. She has dedicated her life to helping teachers improve their work with children and students of all ages. Barbara has been a teacher, a professor, and now an educational consultant. She often can be found working with teachers and administrators in workshops, as well as presenting at state and national conferences. Today we are focused on Barbara's latest book, Rigor in the RTI and MTSS Classroom, Practical Tools and Strategies, co-authored with Bradley S. Witzel. Please welcome Dr. Barbara Blackburn to the show. Say hi to everyone, Barbara.
Hi, and thank you for having me, Steve. It's always fun to do these chats with you.
It's great to have you back, and it really is a lot of fun, and I appreciate you being here. And you definitely have got some great books, and today this is right up there with the best. We recently talked about your book, Rigor and Assessment in the Classroom, and earlier on episode 51 about your book, Rigor Made Easy. Today, we're focused on your latest book, Rigor in the RTI and MTSS Classroom, Practical Tools and Strategies, written with Bradley S. Witzel. Your books are just what the subtitle of this book says, practical. Can you talk about what helps you keep this focus?
Well, throughout all of my books, and that's whether I write them by myself or with a co-author, I always keep in mind, what would a teacher want if they were reading this book? And what I always come back to is teachers want practical ideas. It's certainly true that there is research scattered through the books and everything is research-based. But what teachers ultimately want is not to read two pages of research. They want to know, how do I use this in my classroom tomorrow? And I think that's really important because teachers' time and principals' time is very valuable. And I think we're trying to do so many different things these days that we're looking for something that is valid, but is also quick and practical. And so I always picture a teacher who is trying to do 100 things, who has chosen to invest in one of our books and is really looking for something they can use. And I want to make it practical and I want to make it worth not only their money, but their time.
That's awesome, because that's exactly what, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's nothing worse than a book that's supposed to help you, but you have to get a translator. And I don't mean language. I mean, just the initials and everything else that's like, okay, we are talking English here, but I'm not so sure I understand it.
I read one book, Steve, and in the preface, I'll never forget this. And I don't remember the whole sentence, but I remember part of it. And it was the etiology of this book. And I had to look up what etiology meant, and I'm pretty good. And so that's always my anti-example. I never want to be that book.
There you go. That's exactly. That is a book like that is going to end up on the shelf, collecting dust or holding open a door. Yes. If we got to have a look it up, whatever it means. So as we take a look at your latest book, could we start by explaining Rigor, RTI, and MTSS And then share why a book about RTI and the MTSS classroom, why you would write one.
Okay, I'm going to flip the order. I'm going to talk about the why first.
Okay.
Brad and I worked together when I was at Winthrop. He is still at Winthrop. So we taught together for probably 8 years. And one of the things that kept coming up in my work with Rigor was, what about students with special needs? Students with special needs cannot do rigorous work. So we wrote a book. Gosh, it's been, I think, it's probably been 8 years ago, Rigor for Students with Special Needs. And it was very well received because nobody had ever written on that before. Well, people kept saying, you know, it was a short book. It really wasn't enough information. And we're trying to differentiate. We're trying to make RTI or MTSS work. And we don't really know how to do all that. So I talked to Brad and I said, let's really look at what we need to do. Do we need another book just on strategies, or do we need more than that? And Brad is really the specialist on working with students with special needs, particularly in terms of intervention. So it's one of the reasons we work so well together. He brings that to the table, and I bring the rigor piece to the table. And so the more we looked at it, the more he felt like it needed to be. We started with just the MTSS classroom, and he had talked to some State Department folks and a lot of people in the schools. And then what we found was, even though some states and districts had moved to the MTSS model, and they are, there's a lot of similarities, many places were still using RTI. So we decided to incorporate both. So that's sort of the why in terms of how we got there. Now, with RTI and MTSS, and I'm going to tell your leaders right now that on some of these questions, I cheated a little bit. I sent them to Brad and said, Brad, can you give me a little bit of information to share with the listeners? So you will hear some of that throughout, and this is one of those places. One of the things, and RTI is response to intervention, MTSS, which is the newer piece, is multi-tiered systems of supports. And both of them, in terms of education, are relatively new. I mean, they're not 50 years old, but they're designed to help students improve through two different things, data-based instruction and interventions. And although most people assume, okay, this is how we target our lower-level students, our students with special needs, what it really is designed is to work with all students and to target those interventions toward all students who need them, hopefully so that we can prevent some future problems. And so it really is designed to help all students provide their academic and their behavior performance. We do a little bit on behavior, but we really focus on the academic. And it is a systematic approach. It's not just, and this differs from my other books, because most of my other books are focused on the classroom, or if it's a book for a principal, they're focused on the school. In this case, there is a focus on that, but there's also a broader focus on what needs to happen school-wide. How does the special needs teacher work? How does the classroom teacher work? How does the school counselor, the school psychologist? So there's even a chapter just on planning and that team working together. But they're very effective if they're done correctly. I hear a lot of people say, oh, it doesn't really work in our school. Well, the more I talk to them, they're not really doing it the way it was designed. So that's part of why we broadened our focus instead of just strategies to actually looking at the entire RTI-MTSS process.
Excellent. And it says a lot what you're talking about going back into this world, bringing this, and just the idea that putting a book together that's going to address how this is supposed to look and how this can help kids who have special challenges have a rigorous instruction, have a rigorous focus in the school. And I love where this is going to go. But before we get into too many specifics, what I'd like you to do is talk a little bit about, because this is pretty cool, because the book is not just published by a main publisher. There's a co-publisher here. And, you know, Rigor in the RTI and MTSS Classroom was published by Routledge, but it was co-published by the Council for Exceptional Children. Could you talk a little bit about this collaboration?
Oh, absolutely. And first, let me just say that the Council for Exceptional Children is such an impressive organization to work with. When we first approached them, my editor approached them, we really just wanted a little bit of input. We wanted to see if they might be interested. And they gave us such valuable input at all stages in order to really make sure that we were staying true to the principles of RTI and MTSS. But as an organization, if folks haven't heard of them, they are really dedicated to advancing the success of children with exceptionalities. Now, when you hear that, you automatically think, oh, okay, they're working with special needs students. But they actually look at all disciplines, from general classroom teachers to administrators to psychologists and, of course, special educators. But their outcomes, even though many are geared toward students with special needs, their outcomes are really geared toward improving the education of all students. So we are very excited that they co-published the book. We feel like that's a real honor, and so we appreciate that.
Oh, that's excellent. I thought that was neat because it's neat because it's listed just like that, co-published by, and you don't see that a lot. And so I thought that was pretty cool, especially because of what the organization is as well, where it what its focus is on. So cool. So in the beginning, let's start shifting into the book now. And in the beginning of Rigor in the RTI and MTSS classroom, you refer to data from Doran, Murray, and Gao from 2014. And I have this little quote from that chapter. The most significant predictors of dropping out of school include a set of factors that can be changed. Could you talk about this statement and the data that's referring to?
Yeah, and this is another one where I talked to Brad because he had pulled that research and I wanted to make sure that I was being accurate with it. And one of the things that we know is that we actually can see indicators of potential dropouts quite early. And therefore, our dropout prevention needs to begin early. And I'm not talking about middle school early. I'm talking about elementary school early. And so what these authors found was that the three biggest factors of students with learning disabilities in terms of dropout, there were three of them. The first one was individual. There were individual factors. And these are things like grades and their engagement in high-risk behaviors. The second factor is family. What are the parents' expectations? And then the third one is school, the quality of the student's relationship with teachers and peers. So if we're going to look at dropout prevention, we really need to look at those three areas. And we can't control everyone. You know, I can't change a parent's expectations. I can certainly work on that and hopefully help, but I can't change that. But there are things that we can work on. Certainly improving teacher-student relationships is really clear. Working with them on grades, instructional strategies that will help them improve their grades. Those are two that we can have an impact on. Now, one of the things that the authors, and they make a real strong point about this, is that when we're looking at the types of interventions that need to happen in order to improve those academic outcomes, those need to be empirically validated. You know, it can't just be, oh, this sounds good, so I'll do it. And those kinds of things fall right in line with MTSS and RTI.
That's awesome, because that's, you know, that's exactly this type of book is so important for the classroom teacher, getting back to something we talked about earlier, because what we have is, you know, we need tools. We need something to help us do it. And we need to know that we are looking at and addressing those challenges that we have with the right tools, I guess is my point. And so that's where we're going to get to. And I thank you for going back and looking at that information, because I think sometimes, and we're going to get to this a little bit later, but we just kind of do things, not necessarily with any support behind us saying that it's important to do it this way. And so good stuff. So something I love about your books is the way you write and the easy to follow format. Rigor in the RTI and MTSS classroom continues in this tradition. Something that I love about your books is the way you write and easy to follow format. Rigor in the RTI and MTSS classroom continues in this tradition. I really like the hooks that appear in each chapter that are reflection questions. For example, on page 124, how would it affect the student to track his or her own data and goal line? Or on page 153, it says, does your team collaborate effectively? Are there areas of improvement? And these are throughout the book and throughout the chapters. Talk a little about including these.
Well, I think it goes back to what I said about wanting the books to be practical. Just like with students, if we don't give them the opportunity for reflection and application, the learning doesn't stick. The same is true for us as teachers. So the reflection questions are designed, and they are scattered throughout the book. We try to chunk that information with the questions. They are designed so that a teacher can stop and think about what they've just read, and also decide, is there something I need to do about this? And it's great for an individual reading the book. I've also certainly had schools with all of my books do book studies, and they use those questions to sort of guide the book studies. So that's really the purpose. It's an instructional tool, just like what we use with students.
And that's what's really neat about it, because you do, you know, it's just like you said, you need that time. So as you're reading it, you need, because like I drive people nuts if somebody is, whether they've read a book or not, if I'm reading a book and I find somebody wandering through the hallway who just happens to be near me that I can say, hey, you know, I was just reading this thing in this book. Well, you know, and really help those who have been reading the same book. I'm going to spend a lot of time with them because I need somebody to reflect with me. So what this does is it helps you stop and go, how would I answer this? Or am I paying attention to what I'm reading? So I like
right.
that tool.
Right.
So you always have amazing resources in your books. And before we get into the chapters, I want to make sure that I point this out, that in your RTI and MTSS classroom, you also have these e-resources. You know, can you talk a little about some of those that you included and just the idea behind the why including electronic resources?
The why goes back to the same thing. If it's going to be practical for teachers, some things they don't need to have to try to run a copy and try to enlarge it. You know, it needs to be something they can use. So after we finish the book, we go back and scan and try to find resources that we think teachers would like a copy of. So, for example, there's a math graphic organizer, and it's probably one of the most popular tools that I use. It's been in several books. It's so popular because it helps students break down word problems so that they can really get to the meat of what they're supposed to do instead of getting distracted by the words. So we have an e-resource of that so you can download it and use it. One of the other ones is an intervention analysis, and we make a recommendation for this, and you actually do a progress monitoring of the trend lines. And so you log how many students were involved, how many were projecting toward goal, parallel to the goal, or below the goal. So we put that chart in the e-resources. So we really just try to decide, what do we think teachers would like?
That's excellent, because that once again, it makes it a practical tool, something that they can use. And immediately they've got an e-resource there, multiple ones that they can go and they can take and use. So thanks. I know that it seems a little self-explanatory, but I think it's impressive because it is part of what makes your book a practical tool. So thank you.
Well, and it's something that teachers sometimes overlook. They don't realize it's in there.
You're right.
There's a list front and there's an icon showing you what's an e-resource. But again, I've had people, I've told them about it and they're like, oh, I didn't know that was in the book. So it's always good to mention it.
Very much so. I like that because that is something that I can just imagine. Where was it? See that little symbol? Oh, yeah. Hey, let's start talking about a couple of the chapters. Let's start with chapter 4. And if you have a special one that you'd like to talk about, please do. These are chapters that just kind of fit in with the areas that I focus on in what I do. And chapter 4 is titled Evidence-Based Instructional Strategies. Could you talk about the content of this chapter in relation to this statement, which comes from page 53? And this is this is what you say. Too often we simply implement the latest program or jump on the newest bandwagon without considering whether they are effective or rigorous.
Yeah, that goes all the way back to when I was a teacher. One of the things that I noticed as a teacher was that we didn't stick with things too long. You know, we'd try something and the next year it'd be something else and the next year it'd be something else. And, you know, whether that's a district initiative or school initiative, you know, it was almost like if it didn't work quick enough, we were on to the next big thing. And I saw that and knew that wasn't effective. But as a young teacher, I wasn't totally sure what to do about it. Then when I began working with teachers, I saw that that trend really happened everywhere. And as a part of that, what I noticed, because I would begin to ask a lot of questions, you know, why did you change? You know, and I was in one school and it was a turnaround school. You know, they had had lowest test scores in the district, and now they were like second to highest. They'd seen huge growth with their students. I mean, it was just amazing. And so I was asking a couple of the teachers, you know, what made the difference? You know, what did you do? And they said to me, oh, it was this reading program we used. It was a computerized reading program, da-da-da-da-da, and that's what made the difference. And that really struck me in a less than positive way. One thing's never going to make a difference. It's a combination of factors. But two, they had pretty much said that they didn't matter, that it wasn't anything they did. It was a thing the program did. And I don't believe that. I believe that when change and improvement happens, it's because of things teachers did. Now, I absolutely think that resources play a part, but I got to tell you, give me really good resources in the hands of a bad teacher, and it doesn't make any difference. And give me really bad resources in the hands of a good teacher, and it'll make a difference. And give me good resources with a good teacher, and wow, you knocked the top out of it. So it really bothered me that they did not think that they had a part in it. And I had that conversation with them. And then what I found as I continued to work with schools and talk to them, many times, and again, this is whether it's a district or school initiative or a teacher choice, many times the reason they were doing something was because, and this is going to just sound bad, but many times a salesperson had come in and told them all the great things, and so they went with it. And I worked for a couple of textbook companies, and I can tell you that one district bought our program because they got the most free items.
Wow.
And that, I really resented that. I was a consultant, and the salesperson was very open that that was why they bought from us. And I thought the program was good, don't get me wrong, but getting the most free resources is not a reason to buy something.
Right, so right.
And so seeing all of that really cemented for me the need to pay attention to what we are choosing to use. And sometimes we don't have a choice. Sometimes we're just given something. But we want to be really careful because we have been entrusted with students. And with that, there's an inherent responsibility that we need to do things that are engaging, certainly, but we don't need to do something just because it's cute. Cute is good as long as it also makes a difference with kids. And so that was my philosophy. And then Brad came in from the perspective of intervention with evidence-based. And so our philosophies really blended quite nicely together.
Oh, that's excellent. Because that, you know, you're so right. I've seen companies that have created, you know, the bigger, the prettier, the, you know, cooler, the fancier thing that for whatever reason, there's a great, you know, a great character that makes people smile or something like this. And that not necessarily do they understand the why that they should use it. It's just that it looks really nice or something. And they, we have, and then you've got the same thing that you're talking about. I just talked with somebody from a school system the other day that the only reason why one school, the schools were being given a chance to choose what they wanted, but they were really kind of being directed towards, you know, we want you to choose this. We want you to have your choice, but, you know, have you looked at this one? Have you looked at that? You know, this one over here, tap, tap, tap type thing, you know, and that thing was one of those that you just described. It had all these different resources, not necessarily was it the best device or tools to use. And you're so right on the money. So I love the fact that that was included in here. So,
yeah, and one thing that I would also add, just from an educational perspective, because I did not know this as a teacher, oftentimes companies, and I don't care, I'm not slamming any particular company at all, and there are lots of good resources, so I'm not anti-resources, I'm not anti-textbook, I'm not anti-computer program, but a lot of times when you ask programs for research, they will give you research, but it's all internal. I know of one company that was very big about we are research-based, and they would give us research from the Academy of da-da-da-da-da. Well, that was them. They had named their research group, and it was all internal. Now, that's fine for part of it, but you also need to have something else that says this is a good thing to do. So you got to be careful about that, too. So make sure you're checking your sources. And now I sound like a college professor, but it used to be one, so that's okay.
Yes, that's okay. That's good, because sometimes you got to remind people, we still, it's not just a kid thing. We still got to check our sources. I like that. In Chapter 5, Evidence-Based Practices in Literacy, you include strategies for literacy, reading, and writing. This chapter is a perfect example of how your books are very helpful for the classroom teacher. You know, read today, put in action tomorrow. Talk about some of the strategies that you've included.
Well, I'm going to broaden it a little bit.
All right.
Because chapter 4 and 5 are the instructional chapters. 4 is general strategies that work in any subject area, and then math. And then 5 is literacy. So, for example, in chapter 4, and this was something, it was real interesting because I love working with Brad because he teaches me things. And we put in pieces about explicit instruction and direct instruction. And, you know, to me, I always sort of recoil at direct instruction because I'm like, okay, that means you're going to lecture at the kids all day. It's very structured. It's like following a script, because I've heard that from lots of folks. And as I worked with him, there is a structure to it, but it's not always lecture. Like, you are supposed to infuse activities for application. So there's really clear instructions on those. And I really do like that, because it changed my mindset about it. And I understand now why it's research-based, but not bad, I guess is the best way I can describe that. And that was sort of new to me. So, you know, take that for what that's worth, but I didn't know that. I had some misconceptions. There's also a lot of just simple strategies. So another one, in terms of the general strategies, we wanted to give teachers some formative assessment options that they could use to sort of check for understanding as they go. And one of my favorites is a strategy. This is from Edutopia, which, if you've never checked out that website, they are fabulous. This is called You've Got Mail. And what happens is each student has an envelope, and on the envelope, they write a question about what you've just learned on the front of the envelope, and they write the answer and put it inside. So then the questions are mailed around the room, you know, they're passed around the room, and whoever gets the envelope writes their answer, puts their name on the paper, writes their answer, checks to see if it's correct or not, puts their own response in, and then they pass it around again. They mail them a few times. And I really liked that because of how engaging it was. It just was a really different way of checking for understanding. Now, another one I like, and this one is in Chapter 5, is the pizza wheel. And kids like it to be called pizza wheel instead of just a circle. Basically, you draw a circle and divide it into pizza slices, however many you want. And whatever you've taught, this is another review activity. You have the students choose a slice of pizza, write their name where the crust would be, and write down one thing they learned. And then they pass it to the next student, who does the same thing in a second slice, and then a third slice, depending on how many slices you have. Then they use that for a small group discussion, and then you lead your large group discussion. And so you're really reinforcing the information. And you can do it with anything. I can have taught a lesson on, multiculturalism, and they can do it. But I've also seen teachers use it in a kindergarten classroom where she gives them the number, like the number 4, and they have to write it in different ways. So some of them write the numeral, some of them draw 4 dots, some of them write out the word 4. So you can use it at all grade levels for all students. And again, that's not one that's just the strategies work with anybody. They're not just for special needs. They work with anybody. So let me see what else, because I want to give your listeners a couple of practical ones. Oh, my favorite support strategy is called layering meaning, like you would layer bricks. And I'm sure we have talked about this in one of my other interviews. I'm just sure we have, because I love this one. One of the things that we often do, let's say that I've got 6th graders and we need to read an article on, biomes. I'm just going to make something up. And we're learning about biomes, but this is also an informational article that is going to prepare them for the level of reading of the state test. So I've got a couple of goals going on here. Well, my problem is I've got 8 students who can't read the article. It's too hard for them. And most of those are my special needs students. So typically what we do is we give them something easier to read. The problem with that, though, is that we've actually lowered the level of rigor. And we're not preparing them for the rigor that they're going to be expected to do. Now, before you think, well, she just doesn't want to meet their needs. Yes, I do. Here's what layering meaning says. You give them the easier article on the same topic. Don't change topics. So they read an easier article on biomes. Then, and this is where it's different, you bring them back up to the grade level article and you guide them through it. And what has happened is that by reading the easier article, they have built vocabulary skills and they've built their background knowledge. So they are better able to handle the grade level text. So I've met them where they are, but I'm also really pulling them up for growth with my support. And I taught where what you did was lower the level of reading. And you don't see the growth out of students with that. And again, you're really denying them the opportunity to do rigorous work. So I absolutely love layering meaning. And before we leave this topic, Steve, the challenge is finding the text. But I want you to Google Larry Ferlazzo, Ferlazzo, leveled text. His blog is fabulous. It's resources every day. And he has a set of resources where it's just free leveled text. And so I love them because you can access them online. They're all free. And so they're great. Like there's one called Tween Tribune that the Smithsonian puts out. And so there's all these different levels of the same text. So he's got a really good list. But I got to tell you, for students who are struggling, including your students with special needs, but not limited to them, layering meaning is one of the best things you can do.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. That is awesome. And I want to make sure, because in my just listeners, I'll make sure that I put links to these different sources that Barbara's talking about, like, for example, Larry Ferlazzo's leveled text, and so that you can find that information out as well. So thank you so much about and sharing with us about the layering. And they're with that, how long do you think it starts? Does it just take looking, understanding what you need to do and starting and trying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nothing's a quick fix. You know, if you're looking for something that you can go in and use in your classroom tomorrow and it's going to solve all the problems in the world, you are in the wrong profession. Okay? Just got to tell you. You need to go do something else. I don't know what it would be, but go do something else. You know, change takes time. And change with students takes time and a lot of work. Because kids are not a machine. You know, if I've got a machinery line and we're creating corrugated boxes. You know, if it comes out and it's wrong, maybe I can trim it, or maybe I just throw it out and do something else. We can't do that with kids. We just can't. And so you really do have to work on intensive interventions. And the layering meaning is effective, but it's effective over time. So, you know, I'd love to tell you that after you do it twice, the students don't need it anymore. But that's not true. You may have to do it all year. And if they're 4 years behind, it's going to take more than 1 year to get them caught up. And that's okay. It doesn't mean you're a bad teacher.
I think that's very, very important, is that sometimes the emphasis gets on time and shortness of time, as opposed to it takes time and it is okay, because you've got to be focused on moving them forward, and that it does take time to do that, to see the gains, to see the change in the student. So good stuff. So in chapter 7, which is titled Behavior and Social and Emotional Learning Through RTI and MTSS, you begin this way. An academic focus alone is not enough to improve the well-being of every student. Could you explain why the inclusion of a chapter on SEL or social emotional learning?
Okay, well, that one is funny, because we didn't have that one in there to start with. It was not in our initial outline, because I was very focused on, okay, Brad, tell me what we need to do in terms of the programmatic things, and then we're going to do chapters on instruction, and we're going to be good to go. And I don't know, we're maybe halfway through writing it, and he goes, you know, Barbara, we really got to put in the behavior and social emotional learning. And I'm like, yeah, Brad, I mean, I know there's all kinds of things that go with RTI and MTSS, but this is an instructional book. And he came back to me with this statement. And I was like, okay, then I agree with you. And so it's really funny, because he talked about, and I think I knew some of this, like, I know there's a direct link between, you know, you think about basic needs and learning. So if a student hasn't had food to eat, then they're not going to be real focused on learning. So I really knew those links. And I knew that if students misbehaved and got sent out of class, it impacted learning. But what he talked about was that there's a direct link between behavior and academics. And so we really do need to pay attention to that. And that one of the ways we can impact behavior is to actually teach and reinforce social and emotional learning skills. So when we began to look at that, it didn't take him long to convince me. That's another one. I get my head so focused on instruction that I don't always think about some of the other parts that can clearly impact instruction. And if we think about particularly our students with special needs, we know that a disproportionate amount of those students get suspended. A disproportionate of the amount of those who are suspended are African American. They are male. And when we start looking at our test scores, we see that trend. And so, once you start looking at those things, you go, oh, okay, I really can see how these work. But again, the social and emotional skills piece is one of those things that we really do not only need to pay attention to, but teach them, because they don't always know how to do things. And one of the things in the book, there's a lot of strategies, but one of the things that I just love is there's a set of children's books that you can use to teach social and emotional learning. And at the end of the list, there's a link at Vanderbilt University of lesson plans for those books for teaching social and emotional learning. And I love that for elementary school. And then we also provide a list of young adult novels. So there's not lesson plans with those, but they're great novels to use. And some of them you've probably seen, like Hatchet or Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry. But there's some others in there that you may not, such as Enrique's Journey, or Toby and the Secrets of the Tree. So I really like those lists, because, again, what I wanted to go back to is, okay, it's not just that we need to teach social and emotional learning. It's how are we going to do it?
Excellent. And it's neat the way that that chapter came about, because that's like you're saying, you get to, you kind of wrapping things up and realize you guys start talking about I think we need to include this. And I think it's an excellent chapter because it brings you back to these other factors that can inhibit or interfere with or just part of what the child's dealing with that are not going to help them deal with focusing on the academics.
Yeah, I agree.
So as we're wrapping everything up, what I'd like to make sure, because rigor in the RTI and MTS classroom is exactly what your subtitle says, practical tools and strategies. It's such an awesome tool. And I know my listeners would like to be able to reach out to you and learn more. So what would be the best way for them to reach out to you?
Okay, I'm going to give you a couple of ways. Right. One is through my website, which is BarbaraBlackburnOnline.com, or you can Google Barbara Blackburn and rigor, which impresses the heck out of my stepson, who just thinks it's amazing. You can Google me and find me. So you can always do that. That's sometimes the easiest one. But you can also email me at bcgroup@gmail.com. And I know you're going to put these up. And Steve, I know you'll also put up Twitter and Facebook. Now, my focus in terms of professional development, whether it's online-based or face-to-face, is rigor and instruction for all students, but we can focus that on students that we need to do interventions with. Brad is really the expert in MTSS and RTI. So if you're looking for something for the overall programmatic piece, he works regularly with state departments and school districts. If you email me through my website, I will absolutely get him the information. You can also reach him at Witzel, W-I-T-Z-E-L, B, at Winthrop, W-I-N-T-H-R-O-P.edu. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that we had several state leaders and school leaders who really helped us with the book, and their names are in the acknowledgement. So, you know, if you want to check out and see if your state was really involved, we had some folks who were very instrumental in that.
Excellent. Awesome. And one of the things I also want to do is point out that you do training. You go places and you do training on rigor in the classroom. You also have a way in which they could point that out, that they'd like to know more about that as well, don't you?
Yep. You just go to the website and click professional development. And I love doing on-site. I do it with teachers. I have leadership strategies I do. I do a lot. People are really moving toward a train-the-trainer model. And so I do a lot of that. But, you know, budgets are tight these days, Steve.
Yes.
They just are. So I have a number of people, and I've seen an uptick in this during the last 8 months, who, from a budget perspective, want to do video-based or webinars. So just Tuesday, I did an hour initial overview of rigor that included activities, and I did it video-based, and they loved it. They're very interactive. I do the same activities I do in an on-site session. I just have to have somebody there facilitating it, and so a lot of people are really moving toward that, and I do think some of that is time is tight enough that it's hard to say, we're going to do a whole day and bring people in. Sometimes it's easier to say, we want to do a series of 1 hour things over time, which also give you some sustainability. So any of those, and Brad also does professional development. You can find him on my site under Meet My Team. So the quickest way to get a hold of either one of us is through the website. And to learn about our professional development is just to go to the website.
Excellent. Thank you. And that's what I'll do. And so all you listening right now, I'll have all this linked in the show notes so that you can go back and find that information. So Barbara, last two questions. And here we go. If you were given the chance to talk with teachers about rigor in the RTI and MTSS classroom, what is one thing you would want them to remember or keep in mind?
Okay, I'm going to give you two on both of these last two questions. I'm going to give you my answer and I'm going to give you Brad's answer.
Excellent.
My answer is that if you could only do one thing, it's remember to keep your expectations high and to provide opportunities for rigor for every single student. I don't care how they've been labeled. I don't care how long they've been a behavior problem. I don't care what any other teacher has said to you. Every single child, young adolescent or adolescent in your classroom has the potential to grow and be more than they are now, and don't ever forget it. And so that's mine. Brad's is to remember, and it's actually sort of linked. He talks about the importance of, you know, remembering that you're responsible for every student in your school, not just the ones that are in your classroom. And MTSS and RTI are really designed to help all students improve using a team approach with long-term solutions. But, you know, the old saying that it takes a village really is true. You know, just because they're not sitting in your classroom right now doesn't mean that you're not still responsible for them. So those are our two tips.
Excellent. Excellent advice. And so here's my last one. What would you say to principals to encourage them to have a focus on rigor in the RTI and MTSS classroom?
Okay, we pretty much agreed on this one. So, you know, they really need to remember, like anything else that's effective, it's a long-term solution. It is not a quick fix. It's a change that is systematic. It is not, oh, we'll change this one thing on the surface and everything's going to be fine. It really changes the entire system of the school. But it requires strong leadership and clear direction. And what you really want to do, and we put a lot of this in one of the chapters, is you want to develop a three-year plan. So you really want to look at that. And as a part of that, you want to, even though you're going to provide strong leadership, you also want to develop teacher leadership to really help move the initiative along. Because for long-term sustainability, you can't be the only one who carries it. You've really got to build that support and the ownership. You've got to really build that in your teachers.
That's awesome advice. And I love the fact that taking it that next step, which is that, you know, as a principal, you got to remember you're not going to be there forever, whether you want to be or not. And being able to create sustainability by developing that teacher leadership, so important, so important. Excellent advice. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for joining me today. Rigor in the RTI and MTSS classroom, practical tools and strategies, is a wonderful tool for teachers and administrators. Thank you so much for sharing with us, and I look forward to our next talk. Wishing the best. Take care.
Thank you.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.